This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, GOP members of Congress are gathered in Philadelphia for their annual meeting to work out legislative priorities. Top of the list is the repeal and replace of Obamacare. Well, President Trump will be joining them tomorrow, but earlier today, the president signed more executive orders, these related to national security. Oklahoma Congressman Steve Russell, who serves on the Subcommittee on National Security, will join us from the city of brotherly love in just a moment. Also, Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey, author of the No Taxpayer Funding of Abortion bill, which passed the House yesterday, will join us as well later in the program. And FRC's Arena Grosu will join me to talk about a landmark study on abortion worldwide, which was announced today at FRC. The website, TonyPerkins.com, if you're on Twitter, at T. Perkins. All right, earlier today, President Trump gave a green light to the wall on our southern border. He also signed an executive order dealing with sanctuary cities, among others. Joining us now is Oklahoma Congressman Steve Russell, who represents the 5th Congressional District of the Sooner State. He serves on the Subcommittee on National Security. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony. It's good to be with you.
I know you keep a close eye on national security issues. Your initial response to the president's executive orders today?
Well, I think it's important the American people understand that the main language of the executive order was to reinstate the 2006 law that President Obama was withholding funds for completing the 2,000-mile fencing act. Only 700 miles had been completed, and by the time President Obama took office, then he halted all of that. So this is continuing what the American people already asked for and what got signed in 2006. That's one of the main provisions that he'll be able to immediately operate under the law.
So this deals with the fencing, the wall on the southern border. It ends the policy of catch and release. Another executive order authorizes the stripping of federal grant money to sanctuary cities. Now, these sanctuary cities are essentially cities that are violating current federal law, correct?
Well, they're not only violating current federal law, they're violating the Constitution. They do not have the power under any aspect of the Constitution to make those determinations on what immigration would be. And so, consequently, the federal government has every authority to take any type of action against those that are opposing federal law, and in specific, cities can't determine immigration policy for the United States of America.
So what type of federal funds might be withheld from these cities that are violating the law?
I think one of the things that you could see, it won't be law enforcement, I can assure you that. Those aspects, from what the president has been saying, are going to be expanded, where there will be cooperation. But I think you can see it where it comes to those types of things that the mayors may want for infrastructure or transportation. I'm just guessing. It could be for education. It could be for any number of things. Well, those affect the people that are abiding by the law. And it might specifically be things that these illegal immigrants that are coming in would directly benefit from. The dollars that would go directly to them would be probably the first pick. But I can't speculate. I'm not in the White House. I work with the executive branch in that capacity. But I can tell you this. There's some federal actions that he's already taken. That will allow federal lands in cooperation with the Department of Interior to immediately open up and allow access both to federal, state, and local law enforcement under the Secretary of Homeland Security and Secretary of Interior provisions. And then what was happening is that you would have, like, Park Service, or you'd have somebody else say, well, you can't come here, and it might have been on our border prohibiting its security. That's going to stop, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't think people realize exactly what was happening there is that you had federal lands, federal parks that were telling law enforcement, whether it be those on the border or other law enforcement, they could not go into these areas. And so, therefore, the illegals that would be coming across the border just had free rein in these areas that prohibited law enforcement from coming in, which is absolutely crazy, but it was actually happening.
Well, and the other thing on the executive orders, and I would invite your listeners to go to whitehouse.gov and look specifically at the executive order. You're hearing a lot of things in the media right now about what's in this executive order. I didn't see what they're talking about, torture and all of this stuff. I read the executive order. I didn't see any of that in there. But what it does do is it targets specifically and then lists the dangers of the drug cartels, the dangers to transnational terrorists that might be entering our border. It lists some very specific things, and Americans are very concerned about terror here at home, and they're very concerned about the security of their neighborhoods, and you know, they want to raise their kids in peace. This is something the American public agrees with, that we should have every right to secure our own borders.
Congressman Russell, I have to ask you, are you encouraged with the speed at which President Trump is moving forward with promises that he made on the campaign trail?
I'm just amazed. I'll be the first to admit I was skeptical, like so many Americans, because we've tried to get so much done. But what a breath of fresh air to have an executive now that is not only implementing policy and moving out on action, but he's listed many of the border security measures are on recommendations from Mike McCaul, who's chairman of our Homeland Security Committee, others, law enforcement. He's listening, and these are recommendations on how we can best use technologies. He's listening to the Border Protection Service. He's listening, to all of the agents. It's very encouraging to see what's happening. And I have to tell you, they're very, very pumped up right now because they feel like they have been thwarted in their jobs for the last decade.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along with us on this Wednesday afternoon. Congressman Steve Russell of Oklahoma, my guest, discussing some of the executive orders issued today dealing with national security. Congressman, I want to shift gears for just a moment. You're gathered with fellow Republicans, policy retreat in Philadelphia. What's the expectation coming out of this retreat for GOP lawmakers?
Well, the expectation is it's not pie in the sky. In fact, this morning we had Speaker of the House Paul Ryan and then Majority Leader Mitch McConnell in the Senate laid out the plan of action. So this is not big hand movement concepts. This is stuff that where a plan of action is being laid out, and the executive, President Trump is fully aware, and each branch of government has its role and its cooperative efforts in this. The American people are tired of government not doing anything other than getting too much into their business. And so now we finally have a chance to take those concerns and turn them into actual action, whether it be like immediate executive orders, rolling back regulation, or whether it's having to do the legislative pieces that will take longer.
Now, of course, one of the top items, which was a priority in the campaign, remains a priority now in this administration, is the repeal and replace of Obamacare. I assume that that's a focus of a lot of discussion.
The vast majority of Americans realize that this, the Unaffordable Care Act, has made their lives far more difficult. We all have in our families, with our friends, our coworkers, or we're all sharing it together. We don't have the same doctors. We don't have our same health plan. We don't have the same coverage. Our deductibles are insanely higher. We don't have $2,500 a year cheaper health insurance. In fact, in many cases, it's increased in ways that we never imagined to equal our mortgages or what it costs to buy food. Those are choices that Americans should not have had to do. And so, yes, we are going to repeal it, and then we're going to reform it so that we can put it back into the hands of Americans so that they, as patients, can work with their doctors and that we can put it to state and local control for its implementation, where the government is closer to the people, not bureaucrats here in Washington that are going to be interfering with their lives.
Is there a sense that Congress is going to move quickly on this to give the president an opportunity?
Already are. And now that we'll have Health and Human Services Secretary Dr. Price, Tom Price, which I know very well, served with him in Congress, imagine having a qualified doctor in charge of that organization. What were we thinking, that we put somebody qualified in there that understands these issues? And so now we're going to see very swift action. We're going to use the legislative tools. Sometimes they can be confusing, the budget reconciliation measures, to dismantle the key pieces that we need to do. The president, for his part, will be rolling out executive orders that will take away all of the regulations that caused us to have only a single insurer in the state, or caused skyrocketing prices, with insurers and with health care, or prevented doctors from being able to provide care. So we'll see some of that immediate action. In terms of the long term, it's going to take a little time. But what I do think that you'll see is that no one is going to lose anything immediately. We had an on-ramp that forced us, at the barrel of a federal gun to get into this health care mess. We're going to provide to the American people an off-ramp. So it's not like a bridge out where they're going to be shoved off.
Right.
There'll be exits. And so if they have their health care plans now, those are there. There will be sunsetting as we move to putting health care back in the hands of the American people.
Well, I think that's important to note that we're talking about a 2 to 3 year phase out, so that when you talk about repealing Obamacare, it's not going to go away overnight. It's going to give people a chance to transition back to a free market, individual-based healthcare provider system. So it people aren't going to have the rug pulled out from underneath them. It's going to take a little time to get the replacement.
Well, and they're not. And I would argue that they don't even have a rug under to begin with. I mean, people
right.
are seeing deductibles at $6,500 to $12,000, for families. That's not health insurance. When you have deductibles for that, you're paying $1,200 a month for a year, and then you get hit with something and you're going to pay another $6,500 or more, $20,000 before your plan even pays a dime. That's
true.
The illusion of insurance. That is not insurance. Imagine having an automobile policy that had a $15,000 deductible. Well, what's the point? I mean, it might give you something to hand the policeman, as they pull you over for a traffic stop, but it's not car insurance. And Americans know it, and all of politicians can bloviate all they want on this, Tony, but every American out there in their household, they know what has happened to their health care bills, and that's why we know the American people are demanding this, and we're going to act as quickly as possible.
Right. They're the ones paying the bill, so they do know.
That's right.
Congressman Steve Russell, thanks so much for taking a few moments to join us this afternoon.
My pleasure.
Congressman Steve Russell of Oklahoma. Yeah, I mean, you got to be careful there, because the liberals are saying, well, yeah, they're just going to push the American people off the cliff when it comes to health care. It's not going to happen, folks. First off, it's going to take a while to wind down Obamacare for what value it has. And the congressman's point is well taken. It's not of much value. But they will have time to put the replacement plan together. Point is, they got to move quickly to repeal through this Reconciliation Act. All right, when we come back, Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey joins us. Don't go away.
One of the great freedoms that most Americans enjoy is the ability to get involved in political campaigns. But what about pastors? Unfortunately, due to a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 at President Lyndon Johnson's urging, churches and other nonprofit organizations are prohibited from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax exempt. This is just one of the many problems with the Johnson Amendment. Not only does fear of IRS action put a chill on the free speech of pastors, it restrains other nonprofit organizations from participating in the debate of public policy in their area of expertise. In addition, the IRS only rarely enforces the Johnson Amendment, causing widespread confusion about what constitutes lawful political speech and what doesn't. For more information on how to amend the Johnson Amendment, visit frc.org/Johnson Amendment. That's frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. 159 years ago, President Lincoln quoted the Bible saying, "A house divided against itself cannot stand." 101 years ago, President Teddy Roosevelt declared, "There's no room in this country for hyphenated Americans. The one absolutely certain way of bringing this nation to ruin, of preventing all possibility of it continuing to be a nation at all, would be to permit it to become a tangle of squabbling nationalities." Unquote. After the most divisive administration this country has ever known, we are divided and hyphenated not only by racial classifications as Native American or African American, but also by sexual categories of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender, etc. Continued division leads to further brokenness, but there's healing in unity. By God's grace, let the healing begin. Let us be simply known as Americans, no hyphen needed. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
The Rapid Response Arm of 8 Days of Hope is responding to tornado victims in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. On January 21st, a tornado severely damaged hundreds of homes and killed 4 people. Will you please volunteer to help Hattiesburg residents? Here's 8 Days of Hope director, Steve Tiber.
We need your help today. I mean, it's that simple. We're looking for people who just want to serve others. You know, you don't have to be super gifted. Every disaster gives an opportunity for a believer to share a glimpse of Jesus Christ. You know, the best sermon I ever heard was the one I saw. We're just there to love others as God commands us. And here's where you and I get to be the hands and feet of Jesus Christ.
To volunteer to help with Hattiesburg Tornado Relief, please visit 8daysofhope.com. Financial donations are also needed to support this ministry effort. To give, please visit 8daysofhope.com and pray for this relief effort and for the families affected by this devastating tornado. 8 Days of Hope is a nonprofit Christian ministry.
Welcome back. This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. In a bipartisan vote, the U.S. House of Representatives yesterday, as we discussed briefly, voted 238 to 183 to permanently ban taxpayer funding of abortion. Now, this was, you've heard for years, the Hyde Amendment goes back, I think, to 1977, where it is an annual rider that's put on a certain appropriations bill that prohibits taxpayer funding taxpayer money going to fund elective abortions. Well, yesterday the House passed HB 7, which would make a permanent ban on taxpayer funding of abortion across the board in government spending. Joining me now is the author of that piece of legislation, New Jersey Congressman Chris Smith, longtime champion for the unborn and the voiceless. He joins us from the GOP retreat in Philadelphia. Chris, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thank you so very much, and thank you for the critical role you played in FRC in securing the vote and making sure that we got this across the goal line in the House. And, of course, we still have to get it passed in the Senate.
Yeah, work's still cut out for us, but a very significant vote. All Republicans voted for it. 3 Democrats voted for it. I mean, I think as the chairman of the pro-life caucus that you've championed for 34 years, I mean, you got to be quite pleased with yesterday's vote.
Oh, it was a very, very strong vote. And I thought equally important, the debate. We won that debate. Anyone who watched that, and we had several people just note that, you know, there was nothing but shrill, a lot of harsh statements being made by the other side, while the pro-life lawmakers, especially the women in the House who are pro-life, were absolutely eloquent in their defense of the unborn and equally their mothers.
Well, and you also have to be encouraged that the White House, in advance of the vote, sent out a statement stating that the president would sign it if passed by Congress.
Exactly. You know, last Congress, we got a statement of administration policy, an SAP as they call it, from Obama saying he would veto it, as he has said and did every single pro-life bill that ever came before him, and only one finally got to his desk, defunding Planned Parenthood. And in the alternative, in comes Donald Trump saying, I will sign this if you send it to me. So completely different, 180 degrees.
Now, also, you have in this bill the permanently prohibiting taxpayer funds for funding abortions in the District of Columbia as well.
Yes, we do. That has been, we've lost that as an appropriations rider on several occasions. We lost them all, except for the Hyde Amendment, when Bill Clinton and the Democrat-controlled Congress took out all of the riders, including on the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program, which is the one I first offered back in 1983. So making it permanent is really important. And D.C. would pay for abortion on demand. They have clinics that do them at least up until 24 weeks. Why should the taxpayer be footing the bill for such a horrific act as killing these children? So, yes, that's an important inclusion. And during the debate, of course, they were saying this is a home rule issue. No, it's a protection issue. And to the extent we can protect any child from subsidized abortion, abortion itself, but subsidized abortion in particular, the merits of the bill yesterday, we should do it. And as you know, Tony, 2 million children at least are alive today, and some are adults now over the course of the last 40 years, that the Hyde Amendment has been in effect. 60,000 children are not aborted who otherwise would be, based on very careful analysis, because the money wasn't there to subsidize their demise.
Congressman Smith, how do you respond to the argument of the left, of Democrats, of liberals, saying that what you're trying to do is you're actually blocking women's access to health care?
Well, abortion is not health care. We made that argument during the Obamacare fight. You know, it's the unique and, frankly, a human rights abuse where children are dismembered or chemically poisoned. You know, RU-46, euphemistically called medical abortion, first starves the baby to death, and then the second chemical forces that child to be born prematurely, usually as a dead baby. That's not health care. Health care is about curing, surgical procedures that, you know, excise tumors and other sickly manifestations inside any one of us. Killing a baby is not health care. And it also injures, as we all know, particularly emotionally, women. And the Silent No More efforts that are underway throughout the country of people speaking out, women, all of whom have had abortions, gives stark testimony that there is a consequence that is very significant for women, and we need to care about both victims. It's
but
not health care.
When you, of course, when the government funds something, it gets more of it. And
yeah.
When you look at the top four nations that produce abortions, Russia, China, the United States, and India, I mean, is that really a category that we want to be known by as a nation that is ranks in the top of the countries that produce abortions?
That's an excellent point, Tony. You know, most people don't realize how outside the mainstream of the world belief we are. We're right there with, as you said, countries like Russia, where abortion on demand occurs, although they've actually, in recent years, begun tightening up their abortion law, making it less available.
Because they're almost in a demographic winter. They're losing
their
numbers.
I had a hearing a few years ago with Nicholas Eberstadt, the great AEI demographer, and he said for the last 15 years there have been 3 funerals for every 2 births. Russia is on a disaster glide slope for extinction. That's a little bit overstatement, but they will cease to be the country, and that goes for many countries in Europe. Even China is, with their forced abortion policy, is in a very dangerous situation of too few children, far too many senior citizens, and sex-selected abortion that has resulted in 62 million missing girls.
Amazing.
62 million.
Amazing.
In China.
Congressman Smith, we got to leave it there. We will check back with you as this makes its way over to the Senate, and we will continue to push to see this all the way to the president's desk. Thanks again for your devotion and your leadership.
Bye.
All right, Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey, a true champion. He really is. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over and send him a note and say thank you for standing for the unborn. All right, when we come back, we're going to take a look at that global picture of abortion. Don't go away. We're right back after this.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
So a presidential administration that is obviously very unusual and very different, acting, working differently than any other administration, particularly in its first full week of work. Donald Trump now has met with many political leaders such as Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, Senator Chuck Grassley, Dianne Feinstein, Mitch McConnell, met yesterday with Mike Pompeo after his confirmation as a CIA director, and many others. But here's what's important for the American people. Here is why Donald Trump got elected. In my opinion, Donald Trump sits down with people like Elon Musk, Tesla. We're looking at Michael Dell, Dow Chemical, Ford Motor, International Paper, Lockheed Martin, Johnson & Johnson, General Motors, Fiat Chrysler, U.S. Steel, Whirlpool. Donald Trump meeting with some of the largest unions in the nation, the leaders of the carpenters unions, the plumbers union, North American head of all the trade unions, the Teamster, so on and so forth. All of them coming away from that meeting singing his praises. Elon Musk taking an awful lot of heat from his very loyal followers for praising the president. Listen, you can think what you want about Donald Trump. There's an awful lot that I disagree with, but I can say this much. He is obviously a man that cares deeply about the middle class of the country. He cares deeply about fulfilling his campaign policy of finding out what it's going to take to turn this country around, to create jobs, and build a better America for future generations.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. If you're driving, listen intently, but drive carefully. Okay, coming up this Friday, the March for Life, which is an annual event, will be taking place here in Washington, D.C. You talk about a sea of people. Well, of course, the media doesn't like to report it, but you will see a sea of people if you look upon it. I'll be out there. But prior to that, FRC will once again be hosting its Pro-Life Con. Now, technology has made standing up for the voiceless something that we all can do. And so you can actually join in with pro-life leaders, members of Congress, activists, and others who will be here on Friday morning at the FRC headquarters for our Digital Action Summit, where you can listen to these folks, you can watch them, all who are making advances for the unborn using technology for good. To find out more, go to the website, frc.org, or you can just visit the FRC Facebook page at 8:30 Eastern Time to watch. Now, one of the speakers that will be there is our own Arina Grusu, who is the director of the Center for Human Dignity here at the Family Research Council. And she joins me today, actually, not to talk about the Pro-Life Con, but Arina, today you helped unveil a study that looks at the global impact of abortion since the first country adopted abortion laws back in 1920. And what we were looking at is over 1 billion people who have been aborted since 1920.
That's right. It's very tragic. And this number, it took a long time for Dr. Thomas Jacobson and Dr. Johnston to put the numbers together because they had to look at the data from UN statistics as well as the health departments for each of these countries. But they tracked it, and it's really sobering because we've seen how much talent we've lost, ingenuity, economy, because we've lost 1 billion people. And what this report really shows is that when countries legalize abortion, despite what people say, abortion rates go skyrocket through the roof. And it's awful to see that legalization of abortion directly leads to an increase in abortions.
And Arena, I was talking about this earlier with Congressman Chris Smith, but the top four nations in the world that, in terms of abortion numbers, China, Russia, the United States, and India. I mean, America is at the top of the list of the countries that abort their babies.
That's right. And we really are number three right after China, which we know has an awful, the one-child policy, two-child policy before that, and Russia, which was the leader in legalizing abortion. And the United States is number three. And as we know from other information, in the United States is also one of seven countries in the world that allow abortions past 20 weeks. And
right.
so we join North Korea and right. China in that as well. And so here is first world country that's supposed to be a leader in protecting life and an international leader, and yet we are killing our own people. And so hopefully under this new administration, as we've already seen, this will change and we can turn the tide on abortion.
So, Arena, what were the recommendations coming forth out of this report? I mean, it wasn't just to gather numbers, but there's a purpose behind this report. What is it?
The recommendations are there are 60 countries that have held their ground and that have not allowed abortion in their countries. They're facing a lot of pressure, especially from all of the liberal UN groups, to push for abortion. And so those countries need to stand their ground.
In addition, many of those countries were receiving pressure from the United States and from our State Department, which has been pushing this same liberal abortion agenda.
That's right. And then the other countries, there are 136 countries that have some limited abortion, and we are calling for those countries to completely overturn their abortion legalization, because the moment that they do that, they're going to save their own populations and they're going to turn their tide in their countries. And so this is supposed to show, one, the damage that we've done, but not to stay there, the fact that we can actually make a difference. And, for example, in Poland, once they banned abortion, abortion numbers dropped completely. And we look at that, we could do that everywhere.
Now, let me ask you this, because, you know, we saw the Women's March here. Were you there at the Women's March?
I was not.
Okay, but you're a woman, but you weren't.
That's right.
So it wasn't for all women.
No, in fact, half of American women were not invited to the march because they're pro-life. And but actually, Students for Life made it to the very front of that march with their signs saying abortion betrays women. And so at their very own march, they were stood up by our own pro-life leaders.
You know, one of the things that I have seen from those that are promoting the abortion agenda, complaining about like H.R. 7, which passed yesterday, which bans taxpayer funding of abortion, passed the House, still has to go to the Senate, the president has to sign it. That, you know, well, if these laws are successful, like you just pointed out in Poland, well, who's going to take care of the children? You know, so there's this pushback as if Christians, conservatives only care about unborn babies. But the evidence is overwhelming that it's not just prior to birth, it's after birth as well.
Of course. And actually, as Dr. Close said today on the panel, the pregnancy care centers are the ones who help women not only during their pregnancy, but after, to get formula, to get jobs, to get whatever resources they need. You step foot in a Planned Parenthood and you say, as live action video showed, that they don't offer prenatal care. They don't actually care about women and their children at all. And it's really the pro-lifers, the Christians, who are stepping up and showing them what it is to be truly pro-life and pro-woman.
We're up against a break. Can you hang on just a minute?
Sure.
And I want to finish this conversation on the other side of the break. Folks, talk about just an eye-popping report. It's hard to wrap your mind around the numbers here we're talking about, but we could see it changing. We're going to finish that conversation and take your phone calls when we return here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Hey, do you want to go on a vacation with a purpose? Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. A lot of people love to go to the beach. I'm one of them. How about the mountains? Yeah, a lot of folks are raising their hand right now when I say the mountains. Well, this year, why don't you go with us on a spiritual heritage tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon and have a vacation with an educational and a spiritual purpose. If you'd like to go with us in June or September to D.C. and Mount Vernon, or our separate tour to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, we'd love to have you join us. Just find out all the information at spiritualheritagetours.com. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will join us as our historian, and he'll be commenting all along the way on our rich Christian heritage here in the U.S. We hope you can join us, spiritualheritagetours.com.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Sandy Rios in the morning.
This is a time of madness. It really is. This is from the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby. He said, evil attacks the weakest, denies truth and love, is defeated through Jesus Christ. And I just love that. Evil is defeated through Jesus Christ. And so let's not be afraid. And if you are afraid, then, you know, make yourself right with God.
Sandy Rios in the morning. Weekday mornings at 7 Central on American Family Radio.
We've always had an interest. God has given us a gift of being able to help a lot of people with their finances and budgets and stuff.
AFA supporters Bernie and Alice Larson met Dan Celia at a Faith, Family, and Finance town hall meeting.
And he answered some questions, and we were thinking about the charitable gift annuities, and we'd never heard of that before, but we thought, well, we'd always wanted to leave some of our money for God, but we didn't know where or how. And we felt like this was put into our laps as answer to our prayers as to what we could do after we're gone.
Bernie and Alice learned a charitable gift annuity from the AFA Foundation would provide them with a monthly income for life, as well as supporting the American Family Association into the future. You can learn more about charitable gift annuities and other financial products at afafoundation.net or call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
And you just can't outgive God.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. Thanks for joining us. If you'd like to know more about Washington Watch and about the Family Research Council and like to be a partner with us in bringing this type of information to you and assisting us as we take this information to Capitol Hill, policymakers across the country, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. We'd love to have you as a financial partner in supporting and underwriting this work in our nation's capital and in state capitals across the country. Irina Grosu is my guest. She is the head of our Center for Human Dignity here at FRC. And we're discussing a report that was released today, a multi-year study, looking at abortion rates globally over the last 100 years. And I want to continue this conversation because I want to go back to what you're talking about, Poland. What happens when governments actually turn toward embracing laws that respect the sanctity of human life, abortion rates drop. You have cases where it's becomes illegal to get abortions, but even the restrictions on it reduces the number of abortions because it's a message that the government is sending that abortion is not a good thing, that we respect human life, and so people take their cues from government policy.
That's right. If people go to globallifecampaign.com, click on Poland, you can see for yourself, compare the years, and you see the moment that abortion is legalized in Poland, abortion rates shoot up. And the moment that it was banned in the 90s, in the early 90s, they were not even on the map anymore. And so we see a direct effect of abortion laws, legalizing abortion, on abortion numbers. And honestly, we see this also here in the U.S. In Texas, for example, we had a new Guttmacher study showing that Texas had a huge drop in abortions, and that's because the abortion facilities in Texas closed because they couldn't fulfill their requirements. And so we see that happening here. And also, for example, in America, with Medicaid funding, when Medicaid funding is taken away, abortion rates drop because of that.
Okay, well, people say, well, it's just because they can't get access to abortion, therefore they can't get it. But then it increases the poverty rate, it increases abuse of children, so on and so forth.
Well, what we need to say to those people is that abortion is not the answer. Killing our own future generations is not going to resolve any of this. In fact, it's the restoring the dignity and respect for human life. It's the fact that we help the future generations that actually makes a country wealthy, because those people bring in their intelligence, their talents, everything to the table, and that increases the wealth and power of a country.
It's not only the cultural and spiritual wealth by recognizing the innate value of each and every human life, but as Dr. Pat Fagan with the Marriage and Religion Research Institute, formerly here at the Family Research Council, has pointed out numerous times, human capital is essential for growing an economy. If we want to grow our GDP, if a country wants to grow its GDP, it has to grow, and it cannot be shrinking in its population, because those are the producers, they're also the consumers. And so when a country begins to shrink in its growth strictly by numbers, there's no way to grow the economy.
And we're going to see an inversion of this pyramid, where we have a growing elderly population. We killed 58 million Americans. Who is going to support people who are growing older now, especially since we've increased our ability to stay alive longer because of technology? And so we're going to see a big crash on the Social Security system. And it's a lot of that has to do with the fact that we've killed our children, and now there's no one going to be around to support people who are growing older. And we need to reverse that. And it's really by encouraging pro-life policies, especially here in the U.S., but also internationally, that we're going to restore our own stake as well as globally.
Yeah, I mean, when you have increasingly, you're going to have higher tax rates, Social Security rates, all of that to fund, as you said, kind of an inversion where you've got, instead of having a lot of people working to support a retiree, you've got, you know, like one person working to support several. It's upside down because of our numbers. Now, people would say, well, we're overpopulated. The fact is that's just simply not true.
It's not true. People tend to go towards urban centers, but if you've ever driven through America, most of America is not populated. And so what we're seeing is that certain areas are more populated than others. But if people are interested in learning more about this inversion that's taking place, there's a documentary called Demographic Winter that goes through this. And really the effects that it's going to have is eventually there's going to be healthcare rationing and the push for assisted suicide, because we will have no other way of handling the reality of a growing elderly population and not enough children to take care of America.
So what's next for this study? What do the authors of this hope to do with this study on global abortion rates?
Hopefully we'll be able to have updates every single year. And this will be a lot of members of different countries, ambassadors, diplomats who are actually invited to this event, and some were in attendance. Hopefully we'll be able to pass this out at the UN, our friends, pro-life groups and organizations at the UN, so that they become aware of the abortion history in their own countries and they can do something about it. And we're hoping to see that the numbers and all these charts can start to drop down as people become more aware of the fact that abortion is the greatest genocide that has ever happened in our world.
Irina, thanks so much for joining us today. Appreciate all your work as the director of FRC Center for Human Dignity.
Thank you so much, Tony, for having me on.
All right. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Also, I believe it's up already. It's on Facebook. It was on Facebook Live. It was streaming. So if you want to see that, go to FRC's Facebook page and actually watch today's panel discussion on this report. Some fascinating stuff. All right. I want to go kind of keep on this topic as we were talking about HB7. HR7, the bill that passed yesterday, No Taxpayer Funding of Abortion Act. I've got a clip that took place on, that was a discussion that took place on the House floor yesterday during the debate, and I'm looking for it right here. That was Congresswoman Speier. And, where is it? Anyway, It's a short clip. I want you to listen to this because it's a California Congresswoman Jackie Speier. She had this to say during the debate yesterday, attacking President Trump and kind of mocking him and the Bible during this debate over the no taxpayer funding of Abortion Act. Listen to this.
President Trump once said his favorite book is the Bible. I think he's writing a new book for the Bible called The Apocalypse of Women. It's a reverse Genesis. In the beginning, he divided the country in half with right-wing dog whistles in his inaugural address. On the second day, he ignored millions of people who marched across America and the world. On the third day, he pondered changes to NAFTA and which women's rights to trade away. On the fourth day, he reinstated and expanded the global gag rule, risking women's lives worldwide. Today, he and his House mouthpieces are blocking access to domestic reproductive health coverage, trumpeting alternative facts about legal abortions that have been somehow prevented. Some 2 million of them will prove it. I shudder to think what will happen tomorrow, and I doubt on the seventh day it will be devoted to rest. We must fight this madness and oppose H.R. 7. I yield back.
What do you say? Well, at least she does have some understanding of the story of creation, that it took 7 days. But that's the kind of, expect a lot more of this. I mean, you know, they're just going ballistic. Because, I do not think the left anticipated that Barack Obama and the left, Hillary Clinton, were going to lose and that Donald Trump would win. And that you would actually I don't think they ever thought he would win, let alone actually do what he said he was going to do. Because very few Republicans at that level actually carry out the agenda that they run on. I mean, you've seen it repeatedly in Congress. You get Congress collectively running on issues, but they then get fearful of losing their majority and so they pull back. Well, that's not happening this time. And they can't handle it. They're going crazy. Folks, I mean, look, there's a window of opportunity here. We've got to encourage the administration to move forward with the promises that they made, and they're doing it. Support them, and there's a real opportunity to dial back the liberalism and pull America from the precipice that we've been put on by the liberal policies of this administration. Just got a couple minutes. I'm going to open up the phone lines. 866-372-7234. We can talk about the issues we've been talking about today. I do think the life issues is extremely important. And I know that the left, again, going ballistic over this issue, but it shows you how important it is. I mean, a nation that kills, that aborts its babies, and its future, it does say a lot about the priorities of a nation. And when you, as a government, when you set policy, you're saying what's right and what's wrong. And when you're saying it's okay to take the lives of unborn children, as I said, I think I said this yesterday, it's really hard to draw a line past that. And that's when you devalue human life, you devalue it across the board. And that's why we see, you know, places like Chicago continuing to be literally a war zone. Folks, this is a time where we have to speak with clarity, even in the face of growing opposition on all of these issues of transcendent truth. All right, let's go to Kentucky where Bob is on the line. Bob, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's an honor. Was this woman from California, you say?
She is from California.
Yeah, well, that explains a lot of it right there. But have you noticed how sometimes the truth is not politically correct or it just doesn't sound good? But
At
least about four or five times a day. But other than that, no, I don't really recognize.
Well, to put it mildly, it just doesn't sound like that her and people like her, when they pass away from this world, it doesn't sound like they're going to go to the good place. And that's just, I'm putting it mildly. But it's just, you know, every day you wake up, it just, have you ever heard, truth is stranger than fiction. And it's like these people are, they're not in touch with reality. Do they not think they're going to die one of these days? And I'm just flabbergasted. But I thank you for your show. I try to listen all the time. You keep me abreast of the news and everything. But and these people better take a look. I mean, they better think more than once. They don't think twice, do they? Thank you, Tony. Have a good
All right,
day.
Bob. Thanks for listening. You know, there is a progression in a society, in a culture, and you can actually, and Bob, you'll talk about politically incorrect. I mean, I believe the Bible is true, and I believe it has application even here in the 21st century. You want to see the progression and how we end up where we are, read Romans chapter 1, where we deny the Creator. We are not thankful for what He has done. And there is a coarsening. And then there's just this spiritual blindness that comes upon a society that fails to see truth when it is evident. Even Paul talks about how, creation itself, I'm paraphrasing, but screams of a Creator. And we're without excuse because of all that is around us. But when we know, when we had knowledge and we refuse to be thankful and we refuse to acknowledge the Creator, we go down this very dangerous path that leads to a moral and a spiritual coarsening. But Bob, the good news is that we have a merciful, gracious God who is always waiting to forgive and to restore. And as long as we are breathing, we have an opportunity to partake of His grace as individuals and as a country. And I believe, as I said, a reprieve earlier for the country. I believe it is it's God's grace. It's His mercy that we're experiencing. Now, we've got to continue the turn and do the right things to restore this country to a level of moral goodness to which God can bless. Righteousness exalts a nation. That's biblical. It's also historical. But as individuals, we're never too far gone. We can never do anything that's, as long as we're breathing, that's beyond the grace and the reach of God. So if you, by chance, happen to be listening, and you think all of this stuff is far out, weird, strange, you reject it, ponder eternity. There is a God who loves you. He sent His Son Jesus to die for your sin and for mine. His grace is there for you. Hey, Bob, thanks for the call. Sorry, folks, didn't get to the rest of the calls here. We're a little late getting to the calls today. But, Lord willing, they'll be tomorrow, and I do hope you'll join us again tomorrow. I'll put a little more time in the phone calls tomorrow. In fact, we'll have Thankful Thursday. How about that? All right, I leave you talking about the Apostle Paul with his words from Ephesians 6. When you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.